Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we are wrapping up our political film series with a movie from the 1930s. That is Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, starring none other than Jimmy Stewart. A very good political movie. And we're going to, you know, wrap up our series with this one, which I think is a positive one, which not all of these have been. So it's good to go out on a good note. And I'm excited to talk about this movie, Katie, that's, you know, over 80 years old, but still is relevant today.
Same. I hadn't watched this movie in quite a few years, but I also couldn't believe this movie was made in the 1930s. Like, I, for some reason, thought this was like 50s or something.
Yeah.
But to realize how long ago it was made, and it came out, I did feel bad when I saw it came out in 39. I was like, oh man, that means you were up against Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind. What a year to release a movie. But they're all great films, so it was in good company.
Yes. And if you're wondering what we're going to be doing kind of later on, Netflix and Disney Plus and some of those streaming services do have some new stuff coming out in the next couple of weeks for the holidays. So we're going to kind of cover some of those movies. And then we may still have a throwback or two that we throw in occasionally before the end of the year. It just kind of depends on what comes out and what we decide that we're going to watch and stuff like that. So, but the streaming services are getting some of their like heavy hitters ready for the holiday season, ones that couldn't come out in theaters or, you know, got bought by a streaming service, but were supposed to come out in theaters, stuff like that. So those should
definitely
be good. We don't have much news today, but we do want to mention that Alex Trebek did pass away since our last episode, died from pancreatic cancer at the age of 80, longtime host of Jeopardy. He was, you know, a great person. I never heard anything negative about Alex Trebek in the whole time that I've watched Jeopardy and have known of him. And I read that he died peacefully, which is good, in his home. And Jeopardy still has new episodes right now. They said the last new episode is going to air Christmas Day with Alex Trebek. So that's going to make us all very emotional on Christmas Day watching the last episode of Alex Trebek hosting Jeopardy. But a really nice man who kind of just, you know, did the same thing for such a long time, but was so good at it, and so many people watched him every night, you know, in their homes for 30 minutes watch Jeopardy.
Yeah, he sounded so wonderful. I think I had said episodes way back, like in the winter, my mom, her best friend, got to be on Jeopardy.
Yeah, yeah.
This past year, and she had nothing but wonderful things to say about him. And my mom, I heard two really sweet things this week about Alex Trebek. So my mom sent me an article. Apparently because I love to color, you can see this on my Instagram and stuff too, like coloring, but they also say like coloring is proven to lower your blood pressure. It's like, it's a soothing activity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something I love to do. I've loved it since I was a kid and I still love it today. And, I just think it's like really, it's like, you know, some people like doing motions, like washing dishes is good for some people.
Yeah.
Or painting. For me, coloring is one of those things that's kind of like an activity I don't really have to think about, but it brings me a lot of joy. But apparently, and I will say I'm very prejudiced with crayons and markers. I will only use Crayola. To me, it is the only brand. But I heard that Alex Trebek used Crayola crayons during the show to mark out answers and things and
okay.
to circle stuff. Because apparently if he used to want to use Sharpies, but you could hear it. There was like on the microphone.
Oh, like the squeaking of it. Yeah.
Yeah. You could hear the squeaking. You could hear him undoing the cap. And they tried all sorts of different things, but he liked crayons the best because they didn't make any noise.
Okay.
So I thought that was cute. And then I read too, he and his wife Jean were married for a really long time. And it sounds like had a very happy marriage. And he had always said that he wanted like the last day of his life or whatever, he just wanted to be able to sit with his wife on the porch. They had like a porch mm-hmm. swing and stuff. And he got to do that the day before he died. They got to be together. And I don't even know if he knew, you know, tomorrow's the day or anything, but it was like, he got to go out completely on his own terms. And really that's all you can ask for, but yep. he will be missed.
Yes, he will be. So, and he had a book come out earlier this year, so I haven't mm-hmm. read it yet. It's on my Christmas list. So I'm excited to possibly get that for Christmas and read that. But if you want to read more about Alex Trebek, he did have like a memoir sort of, or a biography, autobiography, I guess, that came out earlier this year that he wrote. So, and then another beloved television personality, Al Roker, He announced on the Today Show last week that he has prostate cancer. He's already gotten the surgery done for it. And he said the surgery went well and that everybody at the hospital and everything did a great job. And he's feeling pretty good, which is good. But also sad news because he's just somebody that's been on, like Alex Trebek has been on TV for so long on the Today Show. And everybody loves him. And so to hear that he had cancer was sad this past week as well. But it seems like he's doing okay. And they got the treatment done and everything. And it seems like he possibly will have a pretty good recovery.
Yes. And then I'm no doctor, but I do know that pancreatic is a lot harder to survive than prostate cancer. So Al Roker had said his prostate cancer was pretty aggressive, but now hearing this more positive feedback after the surgery and stuff, I feel better. And like I had, both grandpas had prostate cancer. Like I've definitely known people who have had it, who it seems to be one that's certainly more solvable.
Okay.
I guess. Yeah.
Very, very nice.
So wishing him a swift recovery and to go into remission too.
For sure. So we have no corrections this week. So we'll move into our recommendations. I only have one recommend. I did finish the Matthew McConaughey book, Green Lights. Really enjoyed that. So finished that up. Also, with me finishing that book, I was able to hit my reading challenge on Goodreads. So
yay!
I read my 12 books for the year, and Katie has it in her hand right now. So it came in the mail finally for you. So.
It did. I'm so excited. So I have 3 books planned to read for Thanksgiving week, just because, you know, we get that extra time off work, the extra day.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a tall order because one of the books that I have planned for Thanksgiving is The Nightingale by Kristen Hannah. Everyone's obsessed with that book and they're making it into a movie with the Fanning sisters, Ellen Dakota
Fanning.
And I just
read The Great Alone by her and that was really good.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. So,
and
yeah.
Jared, I feel like I'm copying you this year with my reading goals. But the book is supposed to be fantastic, but it's like 600 plus pages.
Oh, geez. Okay.
So I have that. I forget the second book and then Green Lights I wanted to read because it sounds like it's going to be a pretty quick read, but I'm super excited about it. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm just...
No, you're good.
But I followed you, Jared, because you had just read A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles. And I wanted to recommend that because I read it last week. We are reading that for a work book club that I guide. And I loved it. I will say if people are like worried about being bored during reading, or if a bigger book like 500 pages is a little daunting to you, this book is definitely like, there were moments where it was a little slow, but I thought the story itself was fascinating. And the fact that the entire story basically takes place in a hotel, it was very Grand Budapest Hotel, but in Russia vibes for me.
Yes. I will say that one was a little bit, like you said, a little harder to read. Just like the writing of it is definitely like, I don't know, I would use like a high school grade level, I guess, to compare it. But like, it's like at a very high grade level, you know, some of these other books, like, you know, that I've been reading have not been that intense to read. But that one definitely just like with its word usage and kind of its subject matter and stuff like that can get pretty difficult. But it is a really enjoyable read, though.
Oh, definitely. And I have his other book. I had already purchased it, but I hadn't read either of these. So I have The Rules of Civility. And Amor Towles, I hope I'm saying his name right. Last name is Towles. I definitely would consider his writing like smart reading level. So
yeah, yep.
I wouldn't tell a seventh grader to read his books.
No.
But that's also why it took longer. But I also was proud that I was challenging myself to read it, because I think part of the reason I can read so fast is because a lot of the writing these days is not that level.
Mm-hmm.
And no offense to anybody, I'm just saying like his was like difficult. But if you look at the book jacket, I believe I'm getting this right, he went to Yale and Stanford. So the man is smart. But anyway, great read. I would recommend that. And I'm currently halfway through The Giver of Stars by Jojo Moyes.
Yep.
And she wrote Me Before You and all sorts. She's a great writer, but this book is fascinating. I did not know if I'd like it. It was a book of the month pick from months ago. But it's about when Roosevelt, FDR, was one of his 12 years or so. His wife, for part of the WPA, though, is it Works Progress Administration, I believe?
I'm not sure.
One of their programs. Do what?
I'm not sure. Oh. I was going to say.
Sorry. I think it's Works Progress.
Okay.
Works Progress Administration. But it was, they started a traveling library because they wanted people that were in you know, for lack of a better term, backwoods, like people who wouldn't have access to public libraries and things, for them to get access to reading materials. And so primarily women would go around and deliver books to these families and to these children. And it was like their primary form of education. Just genius. So this all takes place in Kentucky, and it's like hills and mountainside area of Kentucky. And it is so good so far. So I'm already going to recommend it, because unless it takes a deep nosedive, I think it's going to be great the whole way through. And then lastly, I had never seen, you know, I'm such a big true crime fan. I had never watched Unsolved Mysteries.
Okay.
And they put 2 seasons only on Netflix. I binged them within a week. Like I, this whole last week, I watched both seasons, but I think it's like 10 episodes each or something.
Okay.
But they are so good and spooky enough that there was one I watched before bed one night and I did have trouble falling asleep. Cause I mean, I don't think any, like the family at least was dead. So it's not like, and they're not sure, but I think what's scary about Unsolved Mysteries is they're unsolved. So yes, theoretically all these killers are still out there. But yeah, if you're into the same stuff I'm into, I highly recommend watching those 2 seasons on Netflix. They were so, so good.
Very nice. And then the only other thing that I have that I'm reading right now is Educated by Tara Westover, which is a yes, very highly regarded book that came out a few years ago. I am about halfway through. The first half is very depressing. Just FYI, if you're, you know, getting into it. But I've heard it, you know, it's basically about her life. It's a kind of a biographical book, and the fact that her parents really didn't believe in education and going to public school and things of that nature. So it's the first time she's really in a classroom is at college, at BYU. So that's kind of where I've gotten up to right now, is she's just kind of starting her collegiate, you know, academic career. But the first half of the book kind of goes through her family and crazy things and some sad things that happen to members of her family and stuff like that. But I do really like it so far. It's really interesting. She's you can tell she's very authentic and not really holding anything back in her writing. So I'm excited to finish it. And it's a pretty short book too. So not super duper long.
I'd started doing, I think I've only done this 2 years, but I was putting like my favorite books of the year up, because, you know, we do our favorite movies or whatever. But that was that and Eleanor Oliphant Is Completely Fine were 2 of my favorite books, I think, of last year. But Educated was just fantastic. And I've already been thinking this year, like, what are going to be my top 10? But I might do categories this year, because I feel like I've read a lot of different genres and I've read fiction and nonfiction. So I might split it up differently. So stay tuned for the end of the year.
So with that, we'll move into our review of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, released October 18th of 1939. As you said, Katie, Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind both out that year. So stacked year for movies back in the 30s. So definitely one that is very good, but maybe got overshadowed a little bit when it did come out. It's not rated. If I had to give it a rating, I'd say probably PG. It's not really, doesn't have anything super bad in it. Not a lot of language or you know, violence or anything like that. So PG rating is probably what I would give this movie. It's not vulgar really in any way. It's 2 hours and 9 minutes. Right. And then IMDb is 8.1 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, critics 96%, audience 94%. So very highly regarded. And then box office, it made $144,000. Granted, that is in 1939 money. So today that would probably be a lot more. Yes.
Yeah.
Adjusted for inflation. And if you don't know, the synopsis for this movie is a naive man is appointed to fill a vacancy in the United States Senate. His plans promptly collide with political corruption, but he doesn't back down. And we have some critics' reviews of this film. First up, we have the Variety staff at Variety, who said one of the finest and consistently interesting dramas of the season. Which I would have to agree. I don't know, you know, I'm not super familiar with what came out in 1939, but this movie definitely holds up. So I would say it's probably definitely one of the more highly regarded movies from that time period. Next up is Derek Adams of Time Out, who said, quintessential Capra, that's Frank Capra, by the way, popular wish fulfillment served up with such fast-talking comic panache that you don't have time to question its cornball idealism.
That sums up my feelings perfectly. I'll go more into it. But I like all of the quotes that we're reading, because I thought this movie was a perfect movie to end our political series on, because there is a lot of hope and optimism in this film. And I think that's the way you want to feel after you have an election.
Yep. And then finally, we have Frank Nugent of the New York Times, who says Mr. Smith is one of the best shows of the year. More fun even than the Senate itself. I'd have to agree. I've never been in the Senate, but this movie is definitely interesting. I feel like the Senate probably isn't as interesting as this movie is. So,
like, who thinks the Senate sounds like a good time besides senators that are already there?
Yes. And this was directed by Frank Capra, who was born in Sicily in 1897. You may also know him for It's a Wonderful Life, It Happened One Night, and Mr. Deeds Goes to Town. He was nominated for a Best Director Oscar 6 times and won 3 times for You Can't Take It With You, Mr. Deeds Goes to Town, and also It Happened One Night. And he lived to be 94 years old and died in 1991. So a good long life, and directed a lot of movies that are still very popular today, especially It's a Wonderful Life is about this time of year is when people start pulling that back out and watching it again as we get ready for the holiday season. Also starring Jimmy Stewart, so who we'll talk about here in a minute. And when we come back here on the Silver Screen Podcast, we'll go over the cast for this movie and also give our likes and dislikes for Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Time now to dive into the cast for this movie, starting with Jimmy Stewart.
I love Jimmy Stewart. He is by far one of my all-time favorite actors. We did talk about him in episode 62 when we covered A Philadelphia Story, another great film. He is definitely the Tom Hanks of his time. I always like to remind people of, you know, how history repeats itself. He was born in 1908 in Indiana, Pennsylvania, and he graduated from Princeton. He and his wife, Gloria, ended up having 2 sons and 2 daughters. And then he also served in the Army in World War II as a brigadier general. Then he had his illustrious acting career. He won a Best Lead Actor Oscar for his performance in this film that mm-hmm. we're reviewing. And then you might also recognize him from It's a Wonderful Life, Rear Window, and Vertigo. So he definitely was like, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio and always works with certain people. Tom Hanks works with Spielberg.
Yes.
So Jimmy Stewart was always with Hitchcock and Capra, it seems like.
Yes.
And then he was nominated for 5 acting Oscars in his lifetime. In addition to this movie, he won an honorary Oscar in 1985.
Very nice.
Then next up, we have Jean Arthur. She plays Saunders. I love this character. Jean Arthur was born Gladys Georgiana Green in 1900. She first starred in silent films. She did that for 7 years. And then she's best known for Shane. I know that's one of my dad's favorite Westerns. You Can't Take It With You, which is another Capra film. And Only Angels Have Wings. She was nominated for 1 Best Actress Oscar for The More the Merrier. And she also died in 1991 at the age of 90.
Also lived to be pretty old, right? As well.
And last, we have Claude Rains. I, of course, know him the most from Casablanca. He plays Senator Joseph Payne in the film. So he's the villain. Spoiler. He was an English actor born in 1889. He is in Casablanca, like I mentioned, and also the original The Invisible Man, Notorious, and The Adventures of Robin Hood. That's the one with Errol Flynn. He was nominated for 4 Best Supporting Actor Oscars for Notorious, Mr. Skeffington, Casablanca, and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Well deserved for this movie, if you ask me, mm-hmm. that he got that nomination. But unfortunately, he never won. He did die in 1967 at the age of 77.
Wow. So also lived to be fairly old.
Yeah,
so.
Isn't that crazy?
And this movie doesn't have a large cast. Those are pretty much the 3 main people. There are a lot of like senators and, you know, the boys in the movie and stuff like that you see, but like they don't have a lot of screen time. So this really is like this three person show pretty much.
However, if you are like me and you are really, really into Gone with the Wind and It's a Wonderful Life, like you watch them probably at least once a year like I do. A ton of the actors in this movie are in one of those movies, like either or both. Mm-hmm. So
look out
for that. Like even minor roles, like the judge, whoever played the judge, things like that. Those people they're in both movies.
So we'll get into our likes and dislikes for this movie now. First up for likes, I know you really like the character of Saunders, who is kind of Jefferson Smith, Jimmy Stewart's character's assistant, works in his office and really teaches him like the political process. He comes into this movie, or he comes into the Senate basically not having ever been involved in politics before. He's in charge of kind of it's like the Boy Scouts basically. They refer to it differently in the movie because they probably couldn't say the Boy Scouts, you know, name brand, but that's basically what he is. He's like the, you know, the leader for the Boy Scouts in his state that he comes from. So his whole thing is he wants to get a boys camp built for boys so that they can go and learn skills and be, you know, good gentlemen and good citizens and stuff like that. But she really helps him with the political process in terms of getting, you know, a bill involved and walking him through how all that works and stuff. But her character is really good, especially for a movie that's set in the 30s, because sometimes, yeah, I know what we talk about with movies that are older is that they don't have very well-developed female characters, and this movie is not the case with that, because her character definitely plays a big role in this movie.
Yeah, I think this movie could be, my likes could really be summed up by just saying I thought this movie was ahead of its time. But Saunders especially, she is so smart in this movie and is very self-sufficient. Like, there's never... In the end, I mean, this is a spoiler, but this movie was made in 1939. She and Jimmy Stewart kind of fall in love, or you're led to believe that they're going to fall in love. But she, you never get the sense in the film that she is required to find a husband. Like, nobody really pushes that on her, or like she jokes around. There's a little scam going that she's going to marry somebody else. But like, for the most part, there's nobody saying you have to get married to succeed. And you could just tell that she held her own. Like, she showed up to work every day. And then when Jimmy Stewart needs help in this Senate dispute that's going on, she's the one that knows the ins and outs of how the system works and helps him. I just love it. And I also love that she's very sassy. She's not like this like demure, ladylike, quiet woman. She's like got a lot of gumption.
I would say one of my likes for the movie is that it gets started pretty quickly, which I like. You know, basically what happens is the senator that was holding that position dies, and they're like, we need to find a new senator to, you know, send to Washington, basically. So they have a few discussions about that for a few minutes, and then they're like, what about Jefferson Smith? And so they go talk to him, and he's like, yeah, that would be sure. I'll do it, whatever. He's pretty naive in this movie, like we've said. So, but then from that point on, like, they take him to Washington, and, you know, he sees the Capitol, and he's kind of in the Senate very quickly, which I like, because sometimes, especially with these older movies, we will talk about the fact that they take a while to get going, or it's like, you know, they're supposed to take place here, but it takes 30 minutes for them to get there for whatever reason, just because they aren't told at the, you know, speed that movies today are told with, just because audience attention spans were longer back then. So, you know, we're always like, give it to us fast and, you know, get us to the next thing. But this movie does a good job of kind of just diving right in and not really having a lot of stuff before we actually get to Washington.
Yes. I also love when movies do that too. And I like how these older movies, they kind of like, it wasn't like credits for 30 minutes. Some of them were like Gone with the Wind is like that. But there was also this style at that time of like, you just get in, start the movie. And at the end, it's like the end. It doesn't, yes. There's not like this big wrap up with a lot of exit music. It's just like, we're done there. You got the story.
Yeah, you either have like old movies that like you said, get right into it, or they'll do like the Gone with the Wind where it's like, why is there 25 minutes of instrumental music playing while we like do one name at a time on the screen? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
So another like for this movie is that, you know, Frank Capra really sets up this world of Washington to not be so, you know, cutthroat and, you know, every person out for themselves and stuff like that. He really kind of sets it up to be more optimistic and that, you know, government is important and that your senators and your politicians really do have an impact and can make a lot of changes, you know, for the better. And so that was one of our likes for this film, is that he just sets up a very optimistic world.
Yes, Capra was definitely known for this. And I mean, I haven't read books about Frank Capra. I just know the kind of movies. I've seen a lot of his movies and stuff. And I don't know if it was because he came from Sicily and saw America as a land of opportunity. But I feel like that's what his films represent. They represent the best of America. They represent people who are, when you're out and down on your luck, someone will be there to help you, like in It's a Wonderful Life. Or like, people have dark, depressing times, but that there's always like a community to assist. And this movie is exactly like that, where it's like the best of our politicians. It shows this optimistic world of people getting into politics because they actually want change and positive change, and to do the best, what's best for the greatest amount of people. And I don't think that's always how the world works, but I am definitely more optimistic than pessimistic. So I'm very drawn to this Capra-esque world.
Yes. So, and we already kind of talked about this as well, but it's very, you know, it's a reminder of what people can do when they believe in certain causes and their communities, and, you know, their local cities and towns where they live. Because even though all of these senators and politicians are in Washington, they still do talk about like their local states where they're from and trying to get things done, you know, that will have an effect locally as well as nationally. So it really shows you that, you know, even though they're in Washington, they're still trying to do, at least in this movie, what's best for, you know, the state where you that you elected them from.
Yes, absolutely. And I also, this is kind of twofold. I love that this movie paints politicians in a positive light, because I do have plenty of opinions about politicians in general. But I also appreciate that this movie, I hope people know this too. I mean, if they've listened to the podcast this long, they'll know. But if they haven't seen the movie, I love that this movie is nonpartisan. Mm-hmm. So you never really know who belongs to what party. I don't even know if I can remember them mentioning Republican or Democrat or anything.
So no.
Yeah. So I love that this is just like, this is not gender neutral, but it's just like a neutral film where you don't have to really be for one side or the other. There's a clear villain and a clear good guy. And I would think most people are rooting for the good guy.
Yeah. And I think along with that, you know, we've talked about the character of Saunders as well, but the fact that Jefferson Smith's character, when he first gets there, is receptive to her ideas, is respectful of her thoughts and her opinions on, like, when she's discussing with him, you know, how a bill basically becomes a law, during that whole time, he's paying attention and he's like taking notes and, you know, he's really involved and not just shrugging her off, which again, sometimes in older movies, women are kind of seen to be like, you know, for lack of a better term, a sex symbol pretty much. And that's, you know, all they're good for in some films that are of the older time period. But this movie's not the case. And I really like that in this movie too, how, you know, we're respecting everybody's kind of opinions and thoughts based, you know, we're not being sexist, we're not being ageist, anything like that in this film.
Absolutely. And I also, there was a part, so he goes to the Lincoln Memorial. I think this is the last like, but it stood out to me because of how progressive it was. There was a black gentleman at the Lincoln Memorial, and there was a young kid, and he was asking his grandpa or father figure or somebody about the Lincoln Memorial, and he was reading the Gettysburg Address. And there was a black man there, and he was smiling and he had a tear in his eye. Now, I do think this is a prime example of Hollywood being like, it's all fine now and there's no slavery, and just kind of being like, everything's good now, which it's not, clearly. But I do really appreciate that in 1939, they made the choice to show this. Like, it was important to put in this movie a black person. And it was important also to put something about how, like, when people work in unity together, like, we have, the world works better because we are more open to other races and other cultures and religions and things. So I thought that was beautiful and showed that this movie was clearly ahead of its time, just even in the fact that they were like, let's put this side story in here so people can remember when politicians work together, the good stuff that can be accomplished.
Yes. So I don't think I have any other likes for this movie. Do you have anything else before we move on to dislikes?
No, I'm good to go.
So we'll move into dislikes now. We don't have very many for this film. One thing, though, is it does lose a little bit of momentum at parts. So, like, at the beginning, there's a lot of momentum. Like, we got to find a new senator. And then, you know, he gets to Washington, and there's a lot of momentum there. And then he gets to go to the Capitol, you know, and kind of get his first look at Congress. And, you know, all that's very exciting. But in the middle of the movie, until we get to the part where he starts filibustering, which is, like, still, you know, highly regarded to this day as a great movie scene or segment of a movie. Yeah. Until we get to that kind of beginning, there's probably like 20 minutes in there where it just kind of drags for a little bit. Like, nothing's really happening. He's trying to learn more stuff. You know, he's trying to figure out a way to possibly get his bill passed. There's the whole storyline with, like, they want to build a dam where they want to put the boys' camp. And so that comes into play. But, like, that whole part of it kind of slows things down a little bit.
Yeah, you worded that perfectly, because I do think you're right that at the beginning there's a lot going on, and then it just kind of gets a little dull. And then he works on things with Saunders, and that's really fun. I think there's parts where there's kind of a lull in the movie. And I would almost say, because didn't we say it's like 2 hours and 9 minutes?
Yeah,
I would almost say if you cut down 9 minutes, that probably would have made a pretty big difference for me in the film. But it's still great. There's not a lot I would cut. And I don't even know specific scenes I would cut. But I did think it dragged a little bit at certain points. And I thought that the first time I saw it, and I've continued to think it to this day.
One other dislike that we had is that it is, you know, a joyful movie, which we've talked about, and a hopeful movie, but some of that is a little unrealistic into what actually happens, you know, on the Senate floor or the House floor in terms of, you know, just kind of the optimism of Jimmy Stewart's character and some other things that occur. You know, normally when you read up on Congress or whatever and they're trying to pass a bill or whatever, it takes a long time, you know, and it's got to go through multiple stages and, you know, revisions and things like that. So it really is not a very fast process or really a very exciting one at times. So this movie is kind of, and I get that it's a movie, so they're kind of adding some dramatic, you know, stakes into it, but in terms of like how the actual political process works, it's a little optimistic and things get done very quickly in this film.
Yeah, I just I put that Jimmy Stewart has a lot of doe-eyed optimism. Like, he also, people make fun, I think Jimmy Stewart is pretty widely respected, but I also think a lot of people made fun of him. They're kind of like, he thought that he kind of bumbled his words and stuff, mm-hmm. because he did have a stutter, and you know, he always seems just so optimistic. I mean, that's very attractive to me because I see the world more that way. But I do think a lot of what happens in this movie is pretty unrealistic. But I also think I'm seeing that with the eye of someone in 2020. You know, if we were living in the time before World War II, this might have been more like what the government was like. And maybe people were more hopeful or worked together better in a kind of a bipartisan way. But I thought the thing that especially I love at the end, but was also kind of ludicrous, I can't think of a senator that would do this now. Payne at the end, he's obviously the villain and he takes credit for his wrongdoing. And he, like, first of all, I think he tries to shoot himself.
Yeah. He tries to kill himself out in like the chamber.
Someone takes the gun away, like wrenches the gun away from him. And then he runs into the Senate floor and he's like, I did it. It's all my fault. And I think that's great that he took credit, but it was so melodramatic to do it in that fashion. And then also I just think, like, I can't imagine anyone speaking this way on the Senate floor in general. And also, like, taking credit for wrongdoing, because that's what we've been harping on this entire political movie series, is how people don't do this. Like, a lot of people don't take responsibility these days. Mm-hmm. And that's not what I'm getting from our politicians currently. That's, like, I do expect that and see that in other parts of everyday life, but not in Washington right now.
No, I can't imagine really Republican or Democrat, just like if somebody is opposing them, just standing up and be like, you know what? They're right. Yeah. I'm just going to, you know what? It's just, yeah, you can have this one, you know, I'll get the next one, basically.
Win.
So, yeah, that's kind of what's happening in this movie, is at the end of it. And I get, you know, why they did it. It kind of wraps the movie up in a very nice little bow. And then we're, you know, on our way and we're done. And like you mentioned earlier, it does just kind of end, you know, which is nice. But the fact that he was just like, yeah, I was, I'm actually the bad guy, you know, and admits it to everybody, just doesn't seem
and
like
screams.
It would happen. Yeah. Today. In today's political culture, it just doesn't seem like that would be very realistic. I mean, it would make like national news if that were to happen, you know, on either side, somebody being like, just admitting that, you know, their idea is wrong and the other person's is correct. Yes. So, with that, we'll go ahead and move into our grades for this movie. I think I went first last time. So if you want to go first this time for a grade,
absolutely.
For Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
I struggled with this one because I think this movie's incredibly well done. It's just not a movie that I think about often or I want to watch all of the time. But I still think if I'm judging it just on like storyline and how well done it is, I'm giving it a 92.
Okay.
Which is pretty much right in line with critics and stuff, because it is still, like, especially the filibuster scene is still widely regarded, like you said, as such a great acting moment, cinematic history. And I like seeing the world this way. Like, I like remembering that we can work together and there are good people. And I do think that there are people that are involved in the government and in politics because they do want to make the world better. I just think they're few and far between.
Yes. So I'm going to give this movie pretty close to where you are. I'm going to go an 88 out of 100 for
excellent.
Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Same thing. Not a movie that I think about a ton. This was the second time that I've watched it. You know, since basically I've been born, I watched it for the first time probably 10 years ago, something like that. But again, you're right. It's not one that I think of super often to watch or to put on. And I feel like even if you're a fan of Jimmy Stewart, you don't really think about this movie a ton in terms of like films that he's done in his career. Like, everybody tends to think of It's a Wonderful Life, you know, just because that's the one that's like the very popular one. So even this gets undershadowed a little bit. But yeah, 88 out of 100 for me. Again, if you haven't seen it, I would highly suggest it. It is a a really good movie and a really interesting story. So definitely check it out if you haven't watched it, because it's a really good old movie. But our score is pretty high for Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. And coming up next here on the Silver Screen Podcast, there are a lot of Christmas movies, but there's probably really only one definitive Thanksgiving movie, and that is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with Steve Martin and John Candy trying to get home on Thanksgiving to see their families. And it is a hilarious movie. I have watched it quite a few times. I usually watch it every year around this time. It's never not funny. The jokes still hit even to this day, and both of them are such great comedic actors that it is really just fun to watch them on screen. So it's a very lighthearted movie. If you haven't seen it, we'll be doing that on the next episode of the Silver Screen Podcast. So check out Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. And then wherever you're listening to the show, if you don't mind to rate and review, that really helps us out. We thank you for that. And then you can follow the show on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram. And then just search the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook and we will pop up, and you can listen wherever you listen to podcasts, you know, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. We're in all of those places. So you can find us there. And our next episode will be Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.